Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the ongoing exploration of our spirituality, our emerging spirituality in this time, in this place. And that has to do with a lot of these new and old ideas about ourselves. Today I'll be talking to Celeste Iacoboni, who's written a beautiful book, How Do We Pray? Welcome, Celeste, to the program.
Thank you, Alan.
I really enjoyed your presentation because in asking how do you pray, well, why don't you talk about the vision of getting that book, and then I'll ask you a few questions about that, because you sort of were directed, in a sense, to write this.
Oh, yes. In 2008, I woke up with this vision. I heard the words, how do you pray? How do you dance in ecstasy? Bear your soul to the divine. Bow in gratitude. Merge with nature. And the words went on to ask these questions, and something was really sparked inside of me. I knew that I would ask this to people all over the world. And as I heard these words, I saw people of all traditions, all spiritual faith traditions in prayer. And I felt the heart, the sacred heart of the Christians, the Buddha mind, the universal mind of Buddhists, and the longing and love for the beloved of the Sufis and indigenous people dancing on the earth. And so many beautiful, beautiful ways of prayer. And it really opened my heart. And I felt this love for the essence and oneness of all these traditions. Mm. And I knew that I would be asking this to the world.
And you put together a great book of 129 contributions of people talking about how they pray or some activity. But were you involved in a spiritual practice before that or open to this?
I was very open to it. And I participated in many different spiritual practices, in Native American, in Sufi work, in Hindu chanting. And I love prayer in form and formlessness. So I was very involved.
So when you ask, I mean, I think it's how do you pray? It's something that most people don't think about publicly because it's sort of a private thing, isn't it? Was there a kind of resistance or an excitement about trying to share?
There was an excitement. People were very open and available and wanting to share because prayer is often very personal. And there are so many different ways to pray, at least as many as there are people who are praying. Because, you know, like myself, I pray in many, many different ways. But essentially, I think it's the same way. It's being present to what is, present to the practice or the moment, whatever it is that is happening right now. And people were very generous and very available and willing to participate. And they thought this was a great thing for us to do, to share our prayers, because I think that we find we have a lot more similarities than we do differences.
Right. But when we ask, how do, I mean, the understanding of, do you want to get some water? Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm going to get some here.
Okay. I'm talking to Celeste Iacoboni, who's written a great book, How Do You Pray? And it is about, it's also subtitled, Inspiring Responses from Religious Leaders, Spiritual Guides, Healers, Activists, and other Lovers of Humanity. I didn't catch that at first. And it's published by Monkfish Publishing, monkfishpublishing.com. And what I I'm trying to understand is prayer, the meaning of prayer. Prayer is like an asking of something outside of ourselves.
Most
people, if you go to business offices, corporate, headquarters, they won't talk about prayer. I mean, prayer, we're not really even taught to pray in this culture. If you haven't been brought up religiously, it's a kind of a foreign concept, I'm saying. So how do you define prayer? I mean, I would define it, you're asking something of a higher being or something outside of ourselves to help us somehow. Or someone we know, not just ourselves, but we can pray for other people. But how would you define prayer?
Well, that is one way of defining it, asking something outside of ourselves. But it's also being with and belonging to what we are and what we are part of. That is what the book shares so beautifully. There's so many different definitions of prayer, and it is very personal, and there are many ways to pray. I'd like to read a short excerpt here from Arjuna Ardal.
I know Arjuna. He's a good
guy. Yes. And this is the very last paragraph in his contribution to the book, and he says, prayer is the full spectrum between calling out and longing for the beloved at the same time as resting in the beloved. The separate dimension of you is saying to the non-separate dimension, take me. It is like a raindrop talking to the ocean. They are both water. The raindrop is saying, take me. Take me into yourself so completely that I become you and I am not separate from you in any way. Take me over. Embrace me. Let me become so drunk with you that I become you.
I mean, thank you. That is sweet. But that's an expanded understanding a bit of prayer. I mean, I get that's what the book is about. But prayer mostly is an asking. It's asking for oneself or others to some force to intervene or uplift. And how do we make that shift from prayer being an asking to, I think what is being said here, a being, right? It's a beingness of feeling. I mean, how do we make that shift in communicating that to others, that your prayer is, right, what does Rumi say? Your prayer is what you're doing, or with that quote before, there's a thousand ways to kiss the ground, he says.
Let the beauty you love be what you do.
Right.
There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground.
Mm. So that's what I'm trying to understand, is that, I mean, your book is sort of doing, but how do we make it a being or shift that awareness in ourselves that we just don't have to ask as a prayer, but we can be a prayer, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, I think it is a shifting and being... who we are with our egos that create this illusion of separateness, we have that opportunity to be separate and long for the beloved or pray to the beloved, asking, as you're saying, asking to be one with. How I pray, and I feel it goes from that separate self to being one. So from that separate self where perhaps I am holding someone I love in this place of healing, or holding the world in this place of healing, it starts there, and then it moves into that place of oneness, where I feel this spaciousness, I feel this oneness where there is no more asking and there is no more separation.
Well, if we had that, then we wouldn't have problems with corporations or, creating awful environments on the planet. I think I mean, I think this is the evolution that we need to make as conscious beings. I'm just looking at Patricia Ellsberg's essay, where she says, I aspire to make my life a prayer, to awake to the miracle of being. And then she says, I invoke the full presence of my higher self or essential self, which is radiant, loving, wise, and compassionate. I shift my identity from the separated ego of my personality, become one with this luminous being. My whole being is infused with the radiant, loving energy of essence. I experience soft body bliss. I feel I'm resting in a vast field of love, breathing, and being breathed by love. I become the beloved I have been seeking. Yeah, that. So talk about the what you called in your talk the other night, last night, the prayer field.
Well, I'm realizing sharing prayers with these 120 people and hundreds of people, and now even thousands of people as I'm on these global phone calls, sharing prayers, that we are all part of a prayer field. An energetic flow of love for ourselves, for each other, and for the earth. And I'm feeling that our prayers merge with all the prayers that have ever been said, or embodied, or lived. Because as we're saying, prayer doesn't have to be in words. Indigenous people, really were in dialogue with creation, and that's how they lived. They lived in guidance from spirit, in oneness with the rhythms of nature. So all of these ways of life with prayer and prayers that are being said merge in this energetic template that translates to the physical. Energy follows intention. And it does, our prayers do touch the earth.
So what happened to us? How did we get so far from that, do you think? As a civilization, you know?
Well, I think we get out of touch with the rhythms of nature. Living where we are aware of the cycles of day and night, the seasons, the sunrise, the sunset, growing food, drinking pure water, the very simple ways of living, we've gotten really out of touch in our society, and we've gotten so materialistic, and we've gotten more egotistical, where we do believe the egos that we are separate. And then we buy into that fear and create those emotions that keep us from love and trust and realizing our oneness. And now more than ever, I think that we do need, and that we are realizing, either in our desperation or waking up to realize that, yeah, we are more than our differences and more than these illusions that separate us. And now is the time to come together and realize that our oneness is our greatness.
So as you're talking, I'm thinking every sunrise must be an answer to a prayer, in a sense.
And every sunrise is a prayer. It is that awareness, that presence of that awesomeness and miracle of life.
So life is the answer to a prayer somehow, or is the prayer? I mean, there's somewhere I think it says every breath is a prayer. That is such a different way of living. I mean, how has the book affected your life in that? I mean, what did it remind you of that you may have forgotten?
Well, it reminded me that we are one. And these different expressions are to show us that. These different expressions show our oneness. They aren't proving our separateness, but we are the experiential organs of creation. So we are experiencing life in so many ways. And all over the world, this one beautiful spirit, of course it's called by different names. And these cultures and traditions and religions pop up, and they have different names for this spirit, God, oneness. And so we have many beautiful flavors, and they are all one.
But you personally, I'm just interested in, what did the book help you remember or be in touch with that you may have forgotten about?
Well, it made me realize the beauty of being available and being present and being generous. Like the people in the book, like all of us are busy, have so much going on. Yet I've developed these beautiful relationships with people, and they found this important enough to share their prayers and to be involved, and now even promoting the book. And it's really wonderful. When I sent out the email invitations to people, letting them know that, yes, I'm doing this book, and I would be honored if they would share how they pray and be part of this book and vision. And also if they would rather, we could do a phone conversation. Most people emailed me back, and some of them chose to do a conversation. And the first one was Rabbi Zalman Schachter Shalomi. Mm-hmm. He emailed me, yes, I'd like to do a phone conversation. So the day came and we did. And before he started sharing, he asked me if I was brought up in a religious tradition. And I told them that I was, that when I was young, we were Catholic. I went to a Catholic elementary school. But I walked away from that institution, that church, when I was about 14. So then we went on to share, and he talked for about an hour, sharing all the beauty and many wonderful ways that he prays. Mm. And after the call, he said, don't throw those saints and angels and guides of your youth, don't throw them away with that institution. He said, they're a part of you, they're there for you, and they'll always be there for you. Well, that touched me in such a deep way, because I had a lot of beauty and a lot of love in that tradition that I did walk away from, and I chose to forget about it. And I was calling even the Divine Mother, the Blessed Mother, who I love so much. I called her by all of her other names, Tara, Kuan Yin, Isis, but I forgot about the Blessed Mother, Mary. And this really brought me back to my beginnings and how I learned about prayer. And even growing up in that Catholic church, my mom told me, she said, you know, you can pray in that church, but you don't need that church to pray. You could pray anywhere at any time. So all this came back to me, and I felt so grateful. And now I have an acceptance of our religions and our roots, and things are changing, and we aren't necessarily committed to the traditions that we grew up or our parents' religions, but we don't have to close the door to them either.
So do you do a practice every day of prayer, or an evening before you go to bed? I mean, how do you embody what you've learned here?
Well, when I go to bed, I clear myself. I usually light some incense or some sage, and I clear my room, and I do a forgiveness practice. I let go of anything that needs to be let go of for the day. I use the Hawaiian healing practice of Ho'oponopono, and it's about love, forgiveness, gratitude, and compassion for myself, for all beings. And I do a clearing, and then I usually bring people in. A lot of people ask me to pray for them, to hold them in prayer, people going through lots of health issues and challenges in life. So I usually hold them. I call that like holding them in my heart. I bring them into my awareness, and I bring our whole world, our earth, into my awareness, into my heart. And I hold them and I hold it there. And then I sit. I sit quietly and I sit in stillness. And usually things disappear into a spaciousness. Sometimes I witness and bless if my mind is very active and there are, you know, troubles and things going on. I witness and bless. I watch the mental activity. And sometimes I do ask for help and guidance. Please make me an instrument. I'm asking God, I'm asking the energy, the creation energy.
It's great. I mean, it's in a sense that voice that came to you that told you write this book is sort of calling on you to be this thing, to create a greater embodiment of your consciousness and spirit. That's what I get. You've been called upon to do this for your own evolution as well, and somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I feel like everything I have done in my life has brought me to this place. And when I had this vision, I felt pretty wiped out after it. This was, you know, a big vision. And the way it touched my senses, it really, I felt, I saw, I heard, I smelled, I tasted all of this. And I knew that I was somehow embodying this, that I would share and bring out to the world. And it was really something that I said yes to, and I didn't even know exactly what I was saying yes to. And I still don't, because it's going, it's moving, it's growing, and it is touching people in so many ways. And I keep saying yes to it. I recently received a beautiful letter from a woman in northern Israel.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because you mentioned that. Yes. So,
and she received the book, and she is talking. I can read the letter if you like.
If you don't mind sharing it, if the woman doesn't mind, it would be great to hear it.
I asked her if I could share it, and she said I could.
Okay.
It says, "Dear Celeste, thank you. When I received your book during this last summer's war, I live in northern Israel, I felt submerged under waves of hopelessness for this country and Palestine and for the world, actually, as never before. The spiritual and psychological tools and practices which have served me for decades and always direct me to the calm, happy, peaceful space inside weren't preventing the utter hopelessness into which I woke up every morning. And then came your book, a gift from heaven, asking me the exact right question. How do you pray? Long story short, the hopelessness is gone, evaporated, and replaced by possibility for redemption, reconciliation, reformation. Though the external national circumstances haven't changed yet, external proof isn't here yet, the internal is choosing to embrace the possibility for a liberating change, mutually, collectively. Your book provides me with a doorway to walk through. And when I did, I found all these illuminating people sitting with each other and with me, sharing their responses to the question, how do you pray? In a matter of days of reading, ingesting this book, I relaxed enough to see the bigger picture. I'm seeing the how do you pray book on many millions of bedsides throughout the world. It's the perfect book to read before sleep and dream time, and during both rough times and great times equally. Someone once asked the scribe of the Course in Miracles if she could describe the message of the Course in one word. What would that be? Her response was, relax. Same could be said for your book. In one word, it got me to relax. I am forever grateful to you and the contributing writers and everyone associated with bringing it to the world.
That's a great letter. Put on your website and share with the world. So when we pray, or this transcendent aspect of ourselves, in a sense, it feels like we're all sort of praying to the same thing. I mean, some people call it God, some people call it their ancestors, maybe, but it's a sort of immaterial aspect of the self, the non-ego self. Would you say something like that? Or
I would say something like that. It is part of ourself, and we are part of it. We are all in this oneness. We are all this oneness.
So, I mean, I'm saying all people, in a sense, pray in the same way, because, or I mean, different forms of that, but to the same oneness source, or the same extension of their non-self, their non-ego self. It just feels like that. Somehow.
It does feel like that. And this is what I call the great mystery. And so many other people call it too. So it is a mystery. And I don't think we really can articulate it completely or see it all with our instruments of seeing right now. So it does go beyond words, and it's something that we become aware of or sit with, like this inquiry, how do you pray? It's something that we sit with. There isn't exactly an answer, yet we find a way that is right for us to do what it is that is right for us. I think a lot has to do with awareness, being present and aware, because we are constantly multitasking and thinking about something else while we're doing what we're doing. So to become present in itself is huge.
Well, also, yeah, I think that's a great reminder. But I think also when we go into fear or judgment or doubt or, you know, self-judgment, then we are removing ourselves from the prayer field. And if this book is in our consciousness, we say, oh yeah, right, we can remind ourselves of something bigger than that.
Yes, we can remind ourselves of something bigger and see these different ways of expressing, these different flavors, and get to know them, and realizing that they are quite similar and not at all threatening. Sometimes the unknown can bring up fear, especially in these unknown religious traditions and fundamental ways of being. It's, we have all these preconceptions and ideas about things that scare us. And when we read about them and we realizing our humanity, and that we have so much in common. And if we are praying to ask for things, then it's all the same thing that we're asking for,
right,
as human beings.
Right. Yeah, no, I get that. Well, let's also talk about some of the contributors. I mean, you sent this out to probably lots of people, but when you got their responses, the people, were you just blown away by some of what was written there?
I was. I would come home from my office and look at the daily emails that came in, and so touched. I could only read one at a time. I would read one and it opened up something again that was beyond words. It was a transmission, and I sat with it and loved it. People sometimes ask if I have a favorite, and I say they're all my favorites because each one touches me in such a deep way. And now I open the book, every morning I open the book and read that one that the book falls open to, and other people tell me this too. It's just right. It's just right for that day.
Oh, so you just open the book. That's a great way of reading. You just open it and see what speaks to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I like that there's so many, well, there's some great names in there that everyone's heard of. Byron Katie, of course. And like you said, Rabbi Zalman Schechter. Did he start the Jewish Renewal? Did. Which is what exactly, Jewish Renewal? I should know that, but I don't.
Well, I am going to read... in the back of the book, there are bios of everyone. So this is a wonderful way when you read about someone, how they pray, then you could look in the back of the book and find out about them. Rabbi Zalman Schechter Shalomi, author of Paradigm Shift, From Aging to Saging, Wrapped in a Holy Flame, and Jewish with Feeling, is professor at Temple University and past holder of the World Wisdom Chair at Naropa University. He is the founder of Alliance for Jewish Renewal and is the spiritual director of Foundation for a Jewish Future. And Rabbi Zalman did leave and go beyond this world. He passed away in July of this year.
And was there one thing that you read that just shifted you that you can remember? I mean, I know all of them affected you, but can you remember a moment where you read something and you got some insight into, another part of yourself?
Well, I read this one last night, and I will read it again. And it is in Rabbi Zalman Schechter Shalomi's contribution. But he says, I so appreciate having heard once Terry Gross interviewing the gay bishop of New Hampshire. And she asked him, what's your prayer life like these days? And he said to her, the best thing that I can do is just sit there and let God love me. I was so moved by what he shared. I sent him a fan letter right away. Because that's true. We all say, God so loved the world. God loves me. Jesus loves me. And so on. But we hardly ever sit down and let ourselves be loved. That's become part of my practice too. And that's become part of my practice, to just let God love me.
What does that mean? I mean, how do you do that?
Well, I love form, and I do love to participate in many different rituals and traditions. I love Sufi whirling, and I love chanting, and I just love doing so many songs and prayers and praises and to sit there and let God love me. Alan, it's a little bit like we talked about last night where you said that you like to sit and feel the sun on you.
Yes, I'm doing that right now.
Well, that's one of the ways that I sit and let God love me with what is happening in the moment. And isn't it a wonderful thing if it happens to be letting the sun shine on you? But sit there with what is and feel a presence. I think that's it. Without thinking about a God or a concept, but to be with this feeling or this presence. And I think you have to really explore it to have a sense of what is this presence.
Well, that's what I like about where you're coming from, because you're taking prayer to another level. It's not, because when you think about praying to something, there's a removal of it's me and that, I and that, I think Martin Buber says. But in this aspect of prayer, it's a becoming of oneness. You're not praying to something necessarily, or you can, outside yourself, but it is the being of oneself in kind of existence itself, isn't it?
Yeah. And we have the opportunity to do it whatever way we want. That's just it. We can pray to something outside of ourselves. Why not? We can do that. And or an extension of ourself, or our higher self, or whatever way that we want to think about it, or feel it. Like, how does that feel? That's something also that I realize with all these contributors, they're articulating in words, and it is conceptual, but they're expressing a great feeling that they're it's a feeling, it's an embodiment, it's so much a part of who we are and how we do it, how we live life. You know, are we thinking about it? Are we feeling it? Are we embodying it? So there's all these different ways to be with that.
So have you, there talk about also about Mirabai Starr, why you asked her to do the forward? I'm just curious.
Because she is so wonderful at articulating a lot of these concepts. And she has in her translations of the mystics and being a professor and really teaching about religions, but also spirituality and her own exploration and practice in interspirituality. She's really able to articulate so much that needs to be articulated, and that I thought was important to put forward in this book.
Was there anything that you threw out that, not that you have to tell me, but that just didn't fit, that, you know, that was sort of off the mark?
There were no, I didn't find anything off the mark. That's what's also been so amazing, that it is a continual yes for me. And I find that yes now has become my prayer, saying yes to life. That's a way that I pray. I say yes to life. And these contributions came in, and I loved them all. Some of them touched me in different ways. Some of them were more familiar, or maybe, oh yeah, I do that. Although a part of me, I felt in all of them. It's like I could relate to all of them, but there was nothing really off the mark. And even now, as people interview me and we talk about the book, and it's always an exploration and new and exciting. And I don't always have answers. I'm not, the end-all answer person here. And this is something that we're in together. And that's why it's so exciting to me.
Well, when you say that there was no body that you couldn't sort of relate to, in a sense, what I get is that even asking the question calls people to a higher aspect of themselves. They transcend their sort of worldly existence and go to that place in themselves where they are connecting to something else.
Yes, and it's very humbling as well, because we're talking about things that are very personal And we don't know. I mean, there's no definition of prayer or of God or, I mean, an exact definition. It's very personal. It's our experience. And so their willingness to share that was so beautiful, and to get into this conversation with me and now to share it with the world is so humbling and willing and really, really generous, I think.
Do every culture, does every culture pray in some way? Have you ever found one that didn't? I'm just curious.
I haven't found one that didn't. And I haven't even found human, you know, people that I have talked to that don't pray. There are, in the book, there are atheists that talk about how they pray.
Oh, how do atheists pray?
And they're as prayerful as anyone else. Well, they're talking about the love of nature and humanity. And there are two atheists, and I think they really wanted it to be known that they don't believe in a God, a separate entity. And it's totally understandable. I'd say, like, you know, they thought it was, well, maybe a little different. Maybe they shouldn't even be in a book about prayer. And I thought, no, it's perfect. You know, I pray like you do too. And so that was really just really great to know that even atheists, but we all pray a certain way, in a familiar way as human beings. There's something. And I'm also very interested in learning more about prayer before religions and the shamanic. We do have some shamanic practitioners in the book, Sandra Ingerman and
Hank Wesselman.
Wesselman and Nikki Scully, and they share a lot about Tito La Rosa. They share about how they pray, and indigenous people, Arva Looking Horse and Margaret Behan and Joe T and Orion Mountain Dreamer, and how wonderful to know how indigenous people pray. And I'm fascinated by this prayer before religion, before form, and these beginnings of prayer, like in India, Hinduism, way back. I mean, someone told me that they invented God, and that really intrigued me and has stuck with me. So I would like to explore that more too.
Well, if everyone sort of prays in their own way, well, there's a couple of questions. Then do we need religion, or is there something about, you know, saying ancient languages or doing certain rituals that empower prayer to be more powerful? You know, because that's why people do ritual.
Yeah, well, I think it's part of the prayer field that we were talking about. When you get into a prayer or a mantra that has been said or sung for thousands and thousands of years, you get into an energetic structure of all of these, people who have done that before you. And it's very powerful. So I love that. I really like to do that. And
so you're saying there are ways that we can empower our prayers. Maybe there are that have been laid out that have worked in this prayer field before. I mean, I sort of resist ritual myself, but that's the only reason. But maybe it's true if there have been certain things that have worked and there's a sort of energetic alignment with that, maybe that's why people go to sacred sites and say sacred words or mantras, and because there's a more of a connection to that prayer field. I'm not sure, but maybe there is. What do you think?
I think so. And as I do like my work, I work with Chinet Tsang, a Taoist abdominal massage. I'm working with a shamanic practice that people did the same thing, just like in acupuncture and in these different ancient Ayurvedic, these different practices that are thousands and thousands of years old. We enter into a field, a morphic field, a resonance where these people did this practice. So whether it's a religious practice or a cultural practice, I think they're all spiritual practices in some sense and healing modalities that we do. We are empowered by something. And it's, you just have to check it out and experience it.
Well, have you looked at some of those prayer studies where people were prayed for, they got well sooner
Yes. And the person who was being prayed for didn't even have to believe in prayer or know they were being prayed for. So those are very interesting and fascinating as well. Like, how does that work?
Well, the obvious, well, it seems like there is this thing called the field that are influenced by intention, just the way when people would do meditations in certain crime districts, the crime rate would go down.
Yes. Yeah. And it isn't like we're praying, I'm over here and I'm praying for you and you're way over there. My prayers are going to come over there. It's like we're all here right now. We're all, you know, the prayers don't go anywhere. They're not, they are here now. So I feel when I say hold someone in my heart and I hold them in a way where I put my awareness on them. And I know lots of other people are too, because sometimes people put out that they need prayers in these different networks that I'm involved in. And a lot of people are sending them love and energy and prayers. And it helps. And they say, wow, well, I got better. I think it was all the prayers.
So you could become a sort of central office for prayers around the world, in a sense.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great if we were, you know, 24/7 praying for people? And I think that's what the prayer field is already doing. There are people all over the world praying any time of the day and night, every country, language, and tradition. There are people praying.
So what, do you ever get into the debate over school prayer? Because that was a big thing, you know, should there be prayer in school? But I think you could redefine it as something else and make it acceptable.
I think so. And I think that's what we're doing. We're shaking up the institutions because things aren't as limited and in separation and institutionalized. They don't have to be. This can be something that's all inclusive and it doesn't have to leave anybody out, insult anyone, or go against their belief.
So it could be brought back into school. There's just this moment of connecting with oneself is in a way enough to just activate this divine connection, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, we can have a few moments in silence.
And that will connect us. Have you talked to schools? Have you lectured? And
I haven't yet, but I would like to. I've talked to a lot of children and parents, and that's something that is wonderful. I'm getting lots of responses from children who are, yeah, I mean, they have some innate wisdom here, where they could talk about prayer and God. And it's like, how do you know that before they actually learn it? Because a lot of them are growing up now without religions. Mm. So they learn from their parents, but they also have this, they have these feelings and they have something inside of themselves to share.
Well, maybe your next book should be How Do Children Pray?
Maybe.
I'm curious also, we'll just wrap up here soon, but you know, how did you arrange? I mean, they're not in alphabetical order as I look at these 129 names and I'm looking for somebody. Was that random or how did you arrange this?
It was divine guidance. It was the whole book was, someone asked, I think it was my publisher said, well, how are you going to, arrange these? Is it in traditions or in, there's so many common threads in the book, like, gratitude. Lots of people are talking about gratitude or the heart or thy will be done, or like Arjuna, a drop of water and the ocean. And how will these be arranged? What kind of system will there be? And there really wasn't. It was divine guidance in putting them together in a feeling that went from one to another, and they supported each other so well.
So, yeah, you don't seem to divide this into any religion, although, I mean, more religions are like contemplative prayer by Father Keating. You know his work?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it seems like you just pull it all together because everyone in their own way prays in some form or another.
Yeah, it was divine guidance and certainly divine timing, because I had this vision back in 2008 and I had no idea when the end would come, when it would be finished. And so this book is finished, but the vision goes on.
Uh-huh. Well, I like Robert Pang. I know him in New York briefly. I've met him. But the world mirrors the heart. I like what he says in that. And then, I think there's just there's an evolution happening around the world towards spirituality in general. That's what I've been investigating with this program. How do you see that evolution?
Well, I hear a lot of people now redefining themselves and how they fit into it all, spiritual but not religious, interspiritual, and of course without a name. Like, yes, I'm spiritual, and that's it. But I think it is all shifting, where it is all inclusive, just like this word God. It isn't any one God or one religion or tradition or definition. It is all inclusive and open, so we can partake in these rituals and explore them. And who knows, you might like something. There's so many different ways to chant and to pray and dance and whirl and be in nature, and they're all beautiful in their own way if they're for you. So we have this opportunity now to walk into these practices and partake and be with people and be with their rituals and communion. And if we like it, great, we could do it. And if not, we don't have to.
But it's so weird that there's still so much war going on out there with all this prayer happening. Doesn't seem to fit together somehow.
It is so weird. And I think it's happening. It's happening at the same time. Things are coming to the surface. So from within, it's healing from within. It's coming to the surface as this prayer field is amplified and people are becoming aware of it and becoming aware of how their prayers touch the earth. And just like this letter from Israel, she said there's no external proof yet, but she feels it. So I think it's coming, and in this divine timing.
We as a different cultures, religious cultures, take special time to pray, Sundays for like Christians and the Sabbath, and then Muslims 5 times a day, they pray. Did you get into any of that? I'm looking at this one line that the Prophet Muhammad exclaimed that a bird, after sipping water, always tilts its head upward, not only for the waters to flow through, but for praise and thanks to flow heaven upward. Heavenward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's so much in world being to acknowledge something beyond ourselves that I think we're getting to a place where we don't have to attack each other, you know, but we could be one in this awakening towards this bigger vision. And in a sense, I think we can dissolve religions in that way. That's just my belief. I mean, I'm sure people like to hold on to their rituals, but if it's so personal and private, and I think, you know, like John Lennon said, imagine no religions. That was a prayer, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes. And imagining is a great prayer. Imagining. Well, the work that you're doing is bringing people together in this way as well. And I think the more of us that are bringing people together, and we have these venues to share and talk to thousands of people.
Do you want to read one more and then we can say goodbye?
Okay. I'd like to read Donna Thompson. And Donna says, how do I pray? I close my eyes and clasp my hands in front of my heart. I feel the warmth that fills my heart as soon as I do this. There's immediate presence. Sometimes I pray for something, usually the greatest good in any given situation. Or I ask for guidance. Or with trust, I turn over a situation to God, the light, the great mother, the great spirit, the Christ, whatever name arises in the moment. Or I just communicate with that presence beyond words and names. It's peace, wholeness, healing, and love. I open my eyes. Light is everywhere, and I am in that radiant presence. Prayer is a reminder that we live always in a state of grace.
It reminds me of that sort of a joke. What's the difference between prayer and meditation? Is that prayer is when you talk to God. Meditation is when God talks to you. But we can merge those and bring it all into this ongoing bigger relationship that exists.
Yeah, because I feel like God's talking through me. I mean, that's what I ask for in this vision, in asking people to share how they pray, or showing up today for this talk with you. It's like, okay, you know, I'm going to open my mouth and what's to be said here, and I trust it's what is needed.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's a great inspiration to just read these 129 different perceptions and perspectives on prayer. I mean, you have such great people: Matthew Fox, Patch Adams, Joan Halifax, Sandra Ingeman, Sharon Gannon, Houston Smith. He's a major figure. Dan Millman, Fred Allen Wolf. These are Andrew Harvey, Greg Braden. You know, these are like the kind of world leaders of a new paradigm. So what's your plans? Can you create a World Prayer Day where everyone just prays?
We'll see. I've been working. I have a call this Thursday with Humanities Team, a How Do You Pray call. And there are thousands of people on the call. The last call we did, I think there were 1,400 on it. And we are talking about coming together and talking about this vision, how do you pray, and having days where we get together with different contributors sharing how they pray and what they share in this book, as well as their vision for the world and what we can do together. So there very well may be a prayer day, but now I also bring awareness to inspiration, bringing spirit in with every breath. And that could be the bell that brings us to prayer or brings us to an awareness of gratitude or saying yes to life.
So tell people how to find the book.
Well, you can go onto my website, howdoyoupray.com, and there are links there to Amazon, IndieBound, Barnes & Noble, or you could go to your independent bookstore, and if they don't have it, ask them to order it.
And monkfishpublishing.com would have that too, right?
Yes.
Thanks. So you're off on a tour. Are you speaking anywhere soon?
I'll be at Oblong Books and Music in Rhinebeck, New York on Thursday evening at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
And then this Saturday night up at COSM, Alex and Allison Gray's full moon celebration.
Oh, that's always great. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. At 7:30. I'll be up there.
Well, thank you, Celeste. That's been fun and good luck. And I think, you know, this is, you know, it's not good luck, but this book will inspire so many people to start to reconnect and think about the question if they've forgotten that, you know, in some ways, all of us are always praying for a new job, for a new this. You know, there's just those moment to moment, those wishes that are sort of prayers to something. And this kind of puts our lives in perspective even more. So thanks for your time today.
Oh, thank you.
And so you say your name, Iacoboni?
Iacoboni.
Celeste Iacoboni. How do we pray? How do you pray? You didn't say how do we pray, did you?
No. How do you pray?
Because it's a personal, and it's beautifully written and edited, and I recommend it. So thank you for listening today. I'm Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com. Thank you.